And now, it's sports time. Featuring forecasts, plot synopsis, character studies, explanations, and interviews. Making sports accessible to everyone, from the diehard to the hardly interested. With your host, Ezra Fisher, it's the Dear Sports Fan Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is Ezra. I recently wrote posts for all 32 NFL teams detailing what's special about each one of them. When I posted the articles to the Kansas City Chiefs and Seattle Seahawks, two fans began to squabble on Twitter. I took the opportunity of asking them to be on a podcast to tell me more about themselves and their favorite team. Hope you enjoy the result.
So we're here to talk about football and your favorite football teams. And I was wondering if you each could start and give us your name and something a little bit about your background and your favorite football team.
You want to go first?
I'll let Brian go first.
Okay. Brian Rich. I am a speechwriter and a strategist on a lot of different messaging and innovation-oriented campaigns, often having to do with behavior change and social change, and also spend a lot of time looking at fan affinity and how sports fans develop their interests and how we can better engage them. I'm born and raised in Seattle, so I am a fan of all things Seattle sports, including the Seahawks. Grew up in the era of Dave Craig and Steve Largent and Chuck Knox and what we called Ground Chuck, because he would run the ball right up the middle all the time. And of course, more recently in the Paul Allen era of ownership, we have seen a very different kind of Seahawks team who has embraced some of the most sophisticated and interesting ways of playing the game and engaging their fans, and ultimately, we achieved the great outcome. We won the Super Bowl, and then of course, tragically lost it in the follow-up year. But lifelong Seattle fan, ups and downs, incredible memories and stories from a lifetime as a Seattle Seahawks fan. But that's my story.
All right, well, my name is Doug Weinbrenner. I live in and was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. So I've surrounded myself with the Kansas City Chiefs for almost 41 years now. As far as my Chiefs history and memories go, I was born in the mid-70s, and that was a very forgettable and rough era for about until 1989, and I will never forget the fall of 1989 when a man by the name of Marty Schottenheimer came from Cleveland to Kansas City after losing to the Denver Broncos after a magical John Elway comeback in Cleveland. Then he came and restored the franchise, and the franchise was all about 3 yards and a cloud of dust. It was all about running backs and defense. So, we had anywhere from, Christian Okoye's to Marcus Allen's to Priest Holmes to, we just had this lineage of running backs that continues with Jamal Charles. And then defenses have always been kind of a key. We've not had anything supreme like Seattle's or, the Ravens back in the day, but they've always been a strong, strong component. I was a massive Derek Thomas fan, had the audacity actually to walk up to him. I was my career aspiration, my career position right now is I'm in digital marketing, specifically in health technology. So how latest and greatest technology brings together health information, health outcomes, and I work on behalf of a lot of healthcare companies. But I wanted to be a sports writer or a sports broadcaster. That was my dream. Went to school for it. And then that died a very quick death. But when I was in high school, I wrote for the high school paper, was a sports editor, and under the table, I worked at a sports memorabilia shop. And part of that was meeting people. One time, Bo Jackson and Derek Thomas were signing autographs. And I asked Derek, I said, is there any way I could interview you? He said, absolutely. Gave me his name and number. And I met him at Arrowhead Stadium after practice one day. and interviewed him, and then saw him again at a social function about a month before he died. And Derek Thomas was a big, big factor in my life. I was just a big diehard fan of Derek Thomas. And, you know, the Chiefs have had a decent run over the last 20 years from, you know, Schottenheimer to the Dick Vermeil era. You know, we've had some not so great moments with Herm Edwards and Scott Haley, but I think we're on the right track with Andy Reid. And so I stay with it thick and thin. It's been a lot of 2-14 seasons and a lot of 13-3 seasons, and then several one and dones in the playoffs. Never make it far in the playoffs. So I don't know what it's like, Brian, to taste victory in the playoffs or Super Bowl. And I hope one day my children will.
I wanted to ask each of you, and Doug, maybe you can start and we can sort of alternate and start. What assumptions do you think people make about you because you're a Chiefs fan, or Brian, in your case, a Seahawks fan?
Assumption people make is that I wear red and yellow Zuba pants.
And do you?
Do anybody remember Zuba pants?
I remember them. I fortunately was smart enough never to buy a pair.
Okay.
In any color. People, but.
In 2015, and again, tailgating with Chiefs, and you didn't ask me this question, but tailgating at Chiefs is historical. I mean, when people cover Chiefs games, it's all about the tailgating. It's like a college atmosphere. You will find Zubas still, and they still make them. You can buy them. Then the other one is, you always one and done in the playoffs when and if you ever get there. Those are the two assumptions. That I wear bad baggy pants with stripes, and if I'm lucky enough to get to the playoffs, I will always lose them.
Got it. Brian, what about you?
I think people assume or are surprised to hear that I did not become a Seahawks fan in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. When they got good, that in fact there are people who grew up in Seattle, you know, that there are people west of the Mississippi is sometimes sort of a misconception in the sort of sports fan pantheon in some respects, and that, you know, there are, you know, people who suffered through, you know, years and years of you know, the life of a team that was dramatically underperforming or whatever. You know, just I think the idea that anyone would be a lifelong fan of Seattle Seahawks is surprising. And so they often assume that I'm just a fair weather, you know, recent come to the, you know, support community for our team.
Gotcha. And what assumptions do you make about other Seahawks fans? If you see someone wearing a Seahawks hat, do you sort of flip that around? Do you assume that they're a fair weather fan, or what do you assume about them?
You know, I think I would say two things. So one is, when I meet most fans, I tend to assume that they are lifers, because even though the Seahawks have done very, very well in the last few years, and, you know, in a couple other pockets, you know, not winning the Super Bowl, but, you know, we did go to the Super Bowl in whatever that was, 2007, mm-hmm. I think it was. But, you know, I always assume that as a lifelong diehard Seattle fan, that they're a Seattleite, which tends to at least stereotypically mean, you know, nicer and a little bit more thoughtful often in how they approach their relationship with sports than, you know, you might find, and I don't mean to make, you know, to throw stones, but, you know, a Raiders fan or a Redskins fan or a team
please,
from Washington.
Please throw stones at Raiders fans. It's fine.
You know, like the Raiders fans who I have met and been at games with are, you know, legitimately more aggressive than the Seahawks fans. The Seahawks fans, there's something about the culture in Seattle that's a little bit different. And so I always assume when I meet Seattle fans that they fit that profile and have actually been a little disappointed at times, because I think as the team becomes bigger, fans become more fervent, and you know, some of that sort of sense of representing the Seattle community, you know, it doesn't scale at all times. Mm-hmm. The other assumption I make is that they have perspective. So, you know, I think one of the things when you're a Seattle fan, and maybe you can appreciate this, Doug, as a Chiefs fan, is, you know, we've definitely lost more than we've won, and that is true in all of our sports. I mean, we lost our basketball team, period. Like, they got stolen from the city. You know, the Mariners have the longest current streak of not making the playoffs in baseball, and one of the, I think, maybe the only team that has never won a World Series. Maybe there are two. But so I assume that, you know, you never let the highs get too high, you know, and try not to let the lows get too low. But what I actually find is a lot of people sort of somehow manage to forget the past, and forget the kingdom, and forget the early darker days of being a Seahawks fan, because more recently we have had success and there has been, you know, so much to celebrate and crow about.
What about you, Doug?
That they are year-round. They are diehard. That is truly what they live for. That is truly probably what any conversation you have with them. It could be about politics. It could be about the weather. It could be about anything. And eventually it will go back to the Chiefs. That is just what they live and die for. We don't have a lot of casual fans here at all. We used to have casual Royals fans up until last year, and now that's not the case anymore either. So there's no there's no casual conversation. If you see them wearing gear, it is hardcore. I mean, they will wear gear year round. It is very prideful. It has very deep meaning to them. Only because, you know, we only have two major league franchises, which some cities only have two, some cities only have one. Sacramento Kings stole the Kansas City Kings, so they have a franchise. But if you see people with Chiefs gear on, it's pretty serious. I mean, that's, you know, they're kind of showing their colors, no pun intended.
Gotcha. You guys are friends and friendly sports rivals. What are some things you use to rile the other person up over football?
So I'll start on this one. I actually find that Doug, and I assume this has to do with the long, challenging history as a fan that he described earlier, doesn't really need much riling up. I actually try to take the opposite approach, which is, if and when there are things to celebrate, and that includes in the off season, I try to shoot him a note or send a text and sort of say, you know, hey man, I appreciate that something good just happened. And what's funny is, I think to some extent it actually ends up riling him up, because tasting that good thing and being reminded when those occasional good things seem to happen kind of just, you know, pokes a little bit at the reservoir of disappointment that is there to some extent. So, you know, it is genuine that I try to be, to acknowledge the similarities in our fan trajectory and the life of a Chiefs fan as I can imagine it. But I think even in doing so, it may have a little bit of an antagonizing effect.
So with that, he's taking the high road and he's lying. He's doing it all to jab me and to show off the Super Bowl ring and know that I will never taste what that taste feels or tastes like. No, I kid. Brian comes with great intentions. I have thin skin when it comes to the Chiefs. I have similar friends as Brian who aren't as well-meaning with their jabbing, and and will always remind me of the one and dones, of the paper champions of the 13-3 seasons, or, you know, the successful seasons, and it meaning absolutely nothing because nothing will come of it. It's very much, I kind of boil it down to very much of a Charlie Brown football moment. You know, I don't want to use Lynn Elliott, if you guys remember a Lynn Elliott reference, but, you know, it's always like, oh, here it is. It's set up. It's prime. It's ready to go. I mean, we even had Joe Montana as a quarterback. Very few people remember. And it just didn't happen. It just doesn't seem to ever happen, no matter how primed we are. It just doesn't seem to happen. But nobody, we have short memories, it seems like, you know, as a fan base of hundreds of thousands of people. And we think one day someone's not going to pull that football out and we're actually going to win the whole thing. People still have that hope. I mean, it happened in 1969. And we think it's going to happen again anytime soon. This is the year. This is the year. So I come with thin skin, even if it's well-intended. It's not received that way. And so I tend to punch back when there was no punch thrown.
And how do you get under Brian's skin, or do you?
I try, and I don't think it works, therefore I try even harder. It still doesn't work, so I try even harder. The only thing I have is the Chiefs win against the Seahawks last year, and us having the loudest stadium, which, you know, the Seahawks tout that they have the loudest fan base and the most rambunctious fan base, but the Guinness World Records would like to differ with that. The Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium, and Arrowhead, mind you, was built 45 years ago, and it's literally not shaped for sound. It's not shaped very well. Where other stadiums are built, where sound can be encapsulated, it can be held in, or in some theories can be piped in through the speaker system. And Arrowhead just isn't. It's 72,000, you know, drunk people wearing Zuba pants going nuts on every single play. And I tried to throw that out, and that doesn't seem to work, so nothing seems to rile him up a whole hell of a lot. And I think winning a Super Bowl kind of calms you down a little bit, too. You just kind of have that in your back pocket at all times.
Brian, do you feel like you need a rebuttal on the loudness factor?
Well, look, there's a couple things on the loudness factor. One, you know, I'm happy to cede that to Kansas City because it may be the only thing they have. So I'm okay with that. Two, you know, and Doug and I actually traded this on Facebook. We were talking about it. You know, being the loudest stadium is absolutely, it's a great thing, right? And super passionate fans, you know, are something to be celebrated. What Seattle has become known for, though, I think is far more significant, which is the Beast Quake, which is an actual seismic event, registered, measured seismic event, when Marshawn Lynch broke a tackle in the playoff game against New Orleans, now I guess 3 seasons ago. And then again,
that stiff arm was ridiculous.
Play, where literally, not only was it so loud, but the physical intensity of the fan response to that moment caused a, you know, ripples on the Richter scale. And so, you know, noise is one thing. You know, people used to talk about the Kingdome and how loud it was, and teams would put up speakers in their practice facility to try and replicate the noise as they figured out play calling. Like, noise is a part of the game. Seismic activity, there's only one team that has been able to pull that one off, and that's the Seahawks. So, you know.
Yeah, Doug, you're stuck. Your team does not play on a fault line. There's nothing you can do about it.
No. We play on a flat plane, and we don't have the advantage of Skittles. So, you know, there's that part.
great. Doug, what's one way that following football so passionately or rooting for your team in particular has changed your attitudes about non-sports aspects of life?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would like to think I tend to somehow mentally separate those two from each other. I don't know if that's possible because I'm one person and, you know, carry one, you know, one viewpoint or one worldview at all times. My staff would even say this, I use tons of sports analogy when it comes to business. It's just my default. Matter of fact, I used one in an email yesterday where I said I need to put somebody more into the game. I need to know that I'm more of the coach and need to stand on the sidelines. So I'm always using, and I have people who have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. And I will use a lot of, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of comments, and nobody knows what I'm saying. So I guess it does carry over quite a bit. I use a lot of analogies, and it's lost on a lot of people. But it's just the way my brain works. And I'm, you know, if it weren't for the Royals being so good right now, I'm constantly in football mode thinking of off-season moves and analyzing every aspect of minicamp and OTAs and, you know. But, yeah, I think it's carried over quite a bit just through analogies. And, you know, I think people have written lots of books about that, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of carryover between, you know, sports thinking and sports thought and business world and life in general.
And what about you, Brian?
I mean, I think all the things that Doug was talking about, you know, those ring true for me as well. I use a lot of sports references in my, you know, daily conversation. I have 2 kids, a 7.5-year-old and a 5.5-year-old, and, you know, somehow they have become, you know, pretty good sports fans and particularly football fans. But I actually, you know, the nice thing, and some of this is, you know, trying to combine work with things that I'm interested in and passionate about, but I've actually been able to look a lot at the way the NFL operates, the way the Seahawks run their team, their social media strategy, the growth of the fan base, and integrate that into my work. So I think that some of the most interesting, most sophisticated media marketing, digital, and other strategies are coming out of sports. And the NFL is, you know, the juggernaut there. There's a whole new connection between fantasy sports and TV viewership around football in particular. And so there's a very interesting, you know, cross-platform set of insights that I'm able to watch. So, you know, maybe that's just a rationalization for watching more football and reading more about football, or studying the way, you know, a team like the Seahawks, when they're successful, you know, manages. But aside from just sort of influencing, you know, some of the ways that I talk and certainly my wardrobe on a semi-regular basis, you know, I've actually managed to, I think, turn my affinity for the Seahawks and my love of football into something of a business asset, which may be overstating it, but it certainly makes sense when I try to think about it.
Cool. Well, thanks so much. I've got 3 quick fill-in-the-blank type things that I thought we could end with. So fill-in-the-blank here. Winning is great, but when my team loses, I blank.
I not uncharacteristically find myself sort of curled up in a ball in the corner, sort of unable to process, you know, just normal life functions for at least several hours following when that happens.
My children hide.
All right. Blank is my favorite time of the week during football season.
Any day ending in Y.
Monday, because as much as I enjoy watching the games and sort of experiencing that, it's actually quite stressful and exhausting. And so there's something really nice about sort of being able to step back and try to make sense of what happened the day before when, you know, I was more emotionally invested than perhaps, you know, intellectually organized enough to process it.
Gotcha. And people should root for my team because blank.
I think the Seahawks are the most interesting franchise, whether they are successful or not at the moment, because they make more roster moves than any other team. They have more of a set of personalities and the dynamics, you know, within the team and between, you know, them and rivals, whether it's our quarterback constantly being, you know, thought of as undersized or underrated, or, you know, our defense, being able to trash talk and live up to it most of the time. I just think there are, you know, a lot of times football is reduced to who wins, who loses, or the stats, but I think the personalities and the machinations of how the Seahawks are run make them, you know, the most interesting team in the league to pay attention to, whether you're a lifer like me or not.
The Chiefs were one of a few teams to give birth to football as we know it now. Starting out co-creating their own league to rival the NFL, to eventually becoming an equal to the NFL to the point of being incorporated into the NFL is a feat in and of itself. And then showing early success and being a stalwart in the NFL, I think is key. Of the tradition that they is unparalleled. I don't think people understand, the history of the AFL, the struggles of the AFL, and then the success that they had, you know, playing against the NFL, and then eventually becoming one. And our ownership, former and current ownership, I mean, the Super Bowl, trophy is named after our owner. So I think that's a big deal.
It's
awesome.
Okay.
Well, Brian, Doug, thanks so much for doing this. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Oh,
go Seahawks.
Thank you. Go Chiefs.
All right, take care.
Right, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dear Sports Fan podcast. You can find more podcasts and tons of writing at DearSportsFan.com. If you like what you see and hear there, please subscribe. Thanks to Jesse Fisher for the theme music. He's at jessefisher.com. Have a great day.